had we not left ourselves available to entertain other types of programs and events in our cafe, I wouldn't have never met the people that I've met that led me to information, that got me connected to a person that opened the door for me, that established something that I would never had. Mm-hmm. And me having conversations with people and telling them that we are available for collaboration is what has really brought people to the cafe.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development, specifically with guests who are alumni of the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. In our third season, we hold conversations about engagement and community-driven entrepreneurship. Creating positive and hyper-local impact means fostering deep understanding with stakeholders. We invite you to hear entrepreneurs discuss their own experiences with meeting and collaborating with their fellow community members where they are at, developing and serving with carefully designed and innovative solutions. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 21 with Arnice Foster Hernandez of Featuring the Center for Culinary Arts and Featuring the Cafe.
Hi, Arnice. Welcome to the Communitas of New York podcast. I am thrilled to have you on the show, so welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So what I would love to do is kick it off with, if you could tell us a little bit about Featuring the Center for Culinary Arts and Featuring the Cafe.
Well, they both derived from personal and professional experience. I grew up in Harlem. We went to school in Harlem. And in the summer times, we had to work at our farm in Henderson, North Carolina. That's where I learned about harvesting and cultivating your own food. We grew our own products, our own produce, our own fruits and vegetables. We drank out of our own well. I learned how to cook. My great-grandmother taught me how to cook there. And that's when I started to have a love for food. I established the cafe based off us serving seasonal and organic products in our community, in our Harlem community, so that people can be reintroduced to eating healthy in a very simplistic way. So we source our products from local small businesses, women-owned, Black-owned, LGBTQ-owned, and family-owned companies, not only just to promote their products, but so we can cross-collaborate and market with each other.
That is amazing. And I love how you are integrating like the northern and also like the southern aspects, and also just giving back to the community in terms of not only providing food, but also providing opportunities as well.
Yes. And the reason why that's very important for me is because when we grew up, mm-hmm. my mom was a single parent and we were living in extraordinarily poverty conditions. We ate out of church pantries. We barely had access to food. She worked, but she couldn't really afford to give us the things that we needed to keep us healthy. So we were always sick. And at the same time, on the parallel side of that, we were able to go down to our farm in North Carolina and eat right off of our farm and be healthy, which also forced me to work early, which I did. I started working when I was 15 as a journalism intern for New York City.
Wow.
And that helped put me through college. And one of my degrees, after I did my first college degree, my associate's degree, which was in health science, my second degree was my culinary degree. And I had knew I wanted to pursue some sort of culinary hospitality career, because when we were in North Carolina, we had a little tiny black and white TV my great-grandmother used to have in the kitchen sitting next to her wood-burning stove. Like, we literally lived on a farm. We had a bathroom outside. We didn't have indoor plumbing. And we watched Jacques Pepin and Julia Childs. And I had followed the French technique and French classical cooking pretty much all through my childhood and teenage years. So when I graduated college, I went to the French Culinary Institute. I trained there while I was working. And then I took a leave of absence and I trained in Toulouse, France.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is an amazing. And you know, that is so amazing because it's like where the influence comes from and mm-hmm. just how deep it is. And so I love that you share that. And also speaking a little bit more about your background, you also work for New York City and state government, including working with parks for 33 years. What did you do during this time? And also, how did it prepare you for your new work with Featuring the Center for Culinary Arts?
Well, I started working at 15 as a journalism intern. It was a program in high school. My major in high school was journalism. Mm-hmm. So we were able to work in an environment where we were doing some sort of administrative data work kind of stuff. And I started working in our administration office and actually wound up staying there. I try to encourage and mentor young people today and tell them, if you don't have to worry about paying bills, feeding yourself and putting clothes on your back, the least you could do is do good in school. Mm-hmm. Because I had to worry about all of those things, which is why I worked. And it wasn't out of vanity. It wasn't out of being able to keep up with trends and the latest clothes and the albums at the time. We literally, my sister and I, had to help my mom keep our lights on and eat and have clothes. Yeah. So I started at the New York City and the Parks and Recreation, and I stayed more than half of my life there. But while I worked there, it provided the financial means for me to be able to at least pay my way through college. I wasn't making a lot of money, so it took me a long time to even get my associate's degree. I was making too much to get financial aid, but I wasn't making enough to like pay for more than one college credit a term. Mm-hmm. So it took me like 5 years to get my associate's degree. And then working in an environment in the city at the time, women, particularly Black women, and it's not even just at that time, it's like now, we mm-hmm. always have to credential ourselves up more than what we have to be competitive up against a white male. So I had the experience. I was learning on a job. I had some extraordinary mentors when I was in the Parks Department, but I had to make sure that I also had the educational credentials, because if I wanted to be promoted, those were the things that they were using against us to say, well, you might have the experience, but you need this education. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why after my associate's degree, I had wanted to do my culinary degree is because I had knew at some point I wanted to at least pivot and have a food establishment. So I decided to go to culinary school in 2007, which is what I did. So I worked from 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and then went to culinary school from 4:30 to 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And I did that for a year. And then I went to France for 3 months in 2008. And then I came back and trained for another 2 years. Wow. And featuring the Center for Culinary Arts, I founded that nonprofit in 2022, just a few years ago. I formed that nonprofit, not just from my personal experience, because during that time when we were trying to survive and trying to take care of bills and trying to feed ourselves, at some point we did wind up getting evicted and I was homeless. And there was a group of people from church, from work, from friends, from family that were there to not only just stabilize us and keep us safe and give us the things that we needed, but we were also able to recover from that because we had a community and village of people, including prayer, that helped my sister, my mom, and I get us back on track, which is one of the reasons why I was even able to recover and go to culinary school. But during that time, not only was I homeless, I was also a drug addict. So go figure, by the time I wound up becoming homeless and getting on drugs, we were already kind of established. We were working, we already had careers. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, my whole world gets turned upside down. So I wanted to be able to reestablish or at least give back to people that I knew fell on hard times and were going to be dismissed or get treated with a stigma because of their circumstances. I was never in prison, but I knew working for the city, we had a program called Welfare to Work. And a lot of those people, you know, they come out of the prison system, they're on welfare, but they have to work for their benefit. But the program only lasts for 12 months. And if you don't find a job within the 12 months, you have to go back into the system. And that's not a productive way to rehabilitate someone back into their society. Mm-hmm. And I knew that a lot of the people that I saw come through that system wasn't going to be able to be successful. And I knew with me having the passion for cooking, me being restored and recovered through community, featuring the Center for Culinary Arts goal and our mission is to provide food and hospitality services that strengthen our social and economic fabric of the Harlem community, as well as throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is we'll employ people immediately, like the first day, pay them an above living wage. We'll train them in fine culinary arts and hospitality. And we'll also introduce them to other organizations that performs humanitarian relief, like God's Love We Deliver in World Central Kitchen. That way they'll be able to, not only are they restoring themselves, they'll help restore other people. And this way, they will have a trade, a skill, and these connections with these networks where they'll be able to work throughout the world.
What a journey of resilience. And also, just like through all of that, being able to say, hey, I saw this and I'm going to be the change that I wish to see. Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful.
I have that magnet right up on my refrigerator.
What?
I have have that right on my refrigerator. I've been having that magnet on my refrigerator for 15 years.
I mean, you are the epitome of. So, I love it.
I try. You know what? Sometimes we have to not look at life as being challenging. Life is based on a decision. I believe that my intuition is a GPS. Mm-hmm. And we are fully aware and conscious of the decisions that we make. And we know we're making them that's going to benefit us for the long term or benefit us for the short term. And me coming from a poverty household, but also being able to experience a country life of fresh food and produce and mm-hmm. living healthy and eating off your own land. I knew those were things that were instilled in me in my DNA. Like I was cultivated onto this planet to be able to share nourishment and caring and love to another person, to another human being. And I feel like that I'm supposed to be on this planet to do that and share that with someone else.
For sure. And Arnice, so I want to talk about like opening the cafe. So when did you first have the idea to open a cafe? And what was the turning point for you when you were Parks and Recreation Commissioner in North Hempstead?
So when I was working, as I told you, I started at 15. Throughout mm-hmm. my career, I had did different roles within the Parks Department, and I became a manager fairly early by default. But I had always knew I wanted to be in the hospitality industry. So I was piecemealing this together by going to different community-based programs that would help business startups or entrepreneurs looking to start their own business. So I had incorporated my business in 2006 with a company. It was like a New York State program, the East Harlem Development Corporation, almost like a cohort like Communitas. Mm-hmm. They took a cohort of people. And back then, you know, we didn't really have the internet and all of that stuff. None of that was even existing. So you literally had to go into the books and set yourself up for some real grassroots organizing. Yeah. And I formed my corporation. And it was at the time when Bloomberg was the mayor. So he had first started the Minority Woman Business Enterprise Program. So I was one of the first into that program to be certified as an MWBE. And that was back in 2006. So on paper, I had formed the business, but to execute it, I had started doing street vending. You know how like they do the street fairs in the street where you see different food vendors? Mm-hmm. I started doing that like on weekends. And that had proved to me that that was something I was not going to be doing for a long time because it was extremely, extremely laborsome to get all of your equipment and permits and tents and branding and containers. It was just a lot of work, but I had just started to do that just to see how I was going to fit into pivoting into the food industry. And at the same time, I was working and getting promoted. In 2019, I was promoted to commissioner, which was Parks Commissioner for the town of North Hempstead. So the majority of my career was with New York City. I worked for New York City for 31 years. I worked for the town of North Hempstead for about 2 years. And the town of North Hempstead is out on Long Island. And this is where the pivot happened. This is where the decision happened. I was promoted to commissioner in 2019. The majority of my career was either between Manhattan and the Bronx. So my commute was always less than 30 minutes, no matter where it was that I worked. I get promoted and I have to go out to Long Island. And I was commuting at least 5 hours a day, at 2 hours going, almost 2.5 hours coming back. My son at the time was 2 years old. And then COVID happens and Andrew Cuomo was the governor. And I was able to establish how we were going to function under COVID as a municipality and offering our programs and services to the public. We were one of the first municipalities to open to the public during COVID. So COVID happened in March of 2020. We were open to the public in May. Mm. But at the time, it wasn't that bad traveling because remember, nobody was at work. So driving out there then wasn't bad. I was getting out there in super speed time. But then when stuff started opening back up, now it's back to I wasn't seeing my son in the morning because he was still asleep and I was coming home and he was asleep. And the political landscape was changing. And then George Floyd happened. And I was the only African-American commissioner they had ever hired in the history of the town. And all of those dynamics was clashing with each other. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I told my husband, we are going to have to step out on faith and trust that we either try this, opening up the business, and we'll see where it takes us, or I'm going to have to work another 15 years before I can retire. Because even though I started working very young, mm-hmm. I was an intern until I was able to join the pension. I was hired full time at 18, but I didn't join the pension until I was 19. But my pension plan, I can't retire until I'm 62. Right. So at that point, I had already worked 33 years. I told my husband, I'm going to have to work another 15, 16 years before I can retire. I said, at that point, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, I said, I'm going to have to just give this up. And it was effortless. And that's when I tell people, how do you know how to make a decision about something is when it's effortless, is when you don't have to force yourself to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that I told my husband, I'm not going to be able to survive doing this for another 15 years. And that's when I decided to step out. And it was 2021 when I left the government. And it took 2 years for us to find a location, all orchestrated by the God and Holy Spirit, because I could tell you, if I had got my way, we would have been failed. Mm-hmm. And we found our location in June of 2024. And throughout me still being connected to like business, startup organizations, city services, state services, different organizations that I had already knew, because me growing up in Harlem, I was very well connected to a lot of the Harlem type organizations that focus on businesses, family businesses, and Black businesses. I was able to still keep those networks. So when we opened in June of 2024, we was super like on a high at a peak. In 2024, we really rocked. I was connected to a lot of resources, including Communitas. And then 2025 came, and I mean, it was as if everything just deteriorated. My husband and I actually opened up the cafe with our own money. We did go through a lot of the different programs that are proposed to be for women, Black women, and communities of color, in disadvantaged communities and underserved communities. We went through all of those programs, even though we had the liquid capital as an asset. We were never denied. I mean, I really just call it horrible experience with these organizations that were supposed, or they say they do, on the surface, on paper, they say that they're there to help people open up their businesses, but they make it extremely difficult. The process took so long that we were running through our savings, living off of it. When I said at this point, we should just use it to open up the cafe, and that's what we did. So even though we are growing our customer base, and this is the thing, Monique, that I think is very important. We're not making any money. We're not at break even. But I could tell you that my business, the space, the location, it literally draws in a community of people that for a lifetime have connected now. They have met there.
Yeah.
We have established networks, collaborations. We have established people to be able to work with each other. People who would have never known each other had the business not be there. And also, we offer our services for free. We tell people they could come use the cafe as long as they can market it and promote us and bring in customers. We have people do fitness events like Natasha. She does her hula hoop events out there in the summertime. We have book readings. We have youth groups that come. The police department does their community engagement there. We work with the YMCA. We are really a community development type of business. We're not just a cafe. The food is definitely something that we like people to appreciate because we put a lot of intention in the food, but I don't give up for the reason that I see the purpose that the space serves. And that's what keeps me going on a daily basis. Look, it's light down in the valley. I ain't see it yet, but
it's there. It's speaking. You know it's there. Yeah.
It's there somewhere.
Yes. Just like I love to hear about just staying in the Communitas community. As you mentioned, Natasha Burrell of Hula Hoop Fit 366, who is also a Communitas alumni. So I love to see that. And also our niece, I love that the cafe is not only about feeding people, it's about revitalizing community, creating jobs, and just giving people a second chance. And also on your website, you mentioned that the cafe is a community center space in which folks can feel that they belong. And that it's also is a place that mirrors your life purpose and a place for a second chance that you now are able to offer to others. So can you talk about and describe some aspects of this purpose and the characteristic spirit of the space, like some more of the examples you gave?
So the space itself, we're on the original 135th Street corridor, which was the Harlem Renaissance corridor.
Yeah.
And is celebrated for a lot of the jazz, African-American jazz greats that will perform and or live on the block. So the block has actual plaques in the sidewalk that are dedicated to the jazz greats that used to sing on the block, like Dizzy Gillespie and Billie Holiday. And you have them on both sides of the block. Actually, that was the original Walk of Fame before it went to 125th Street. So I wanted to make sure, me knowing that, and also my obsession, I'm telling you, if I had to be born somewhere, I would say I wanted to be born in New Orleans, not just because of the food. They celebrate and fellowship. The diversity of culture and inclusion in New Orleans is just exceptional. So growing up, as you know, I told you, I was always watching cooking shows. And one of the chefs, one of the celebrity chefs that I watched from his very first show was Emeril Lagasse, and he's from New Orleans. So I took the spirit and essence of culinary fellowship, inclusion and diversity, and incorporated it into the space. So it does have Mardi Gras colors, but we don't celebrate the colonized version of Mardi Gras because, you know, that's a French festival. Mardi Gras is a French festival, translates to Fat Tuesday in English. But the reason why we have a Mardi Gras themed space is more for fellowship inclusion and for music and for the culinary culture. So one of the main important things that we have in the cafe, not just celebrating the historical music element of the block. Like I said, we support other small businesses, other business owners, other entrepreneurs. We have a mural in the cafe of my husband's son and I. We had a local artist paint that mural. Her name is Jocelyn Good, and her Instagram handle, I believe, is The Rich Painter Chick. And she painted a hand-painted mural on our wall. And it's like as if we're playing instruments coming down the road, playing like the jazz festival. And we have a saying on the top, as if that's the name of the song. It says, in a world where you could be anything, be kind. Mm-hmm. And the space itself, I set it up where it feels like as if you're walking kind of into like a library, but a really cozy, comfy library, you know, like one that's in a small house on a hill in the countryside. And we have a lantern. It's a light, but it's a lantern. And all through New Orleans and Louisiana and the South Mississippi and these places where the Underground Railroad ran through, if you were a runaway slave in the Underground Railroad and you saw a house with a lit lantern, that means that that house was safe. So we have a lit lantern at the entrance of the cafe. A lot of people don't know what that means, but when I tell them what it means, it really just adds another layer of the understanding of the intention that we want people to appreciate when they come into the cafe. We have a free library, so people bring books and they could take books. It's free. It's all sorts of type of literature there, predominantly, you know, African-American or people of color literature. We just don't sell food products. We sell products from other businesses, things that are small because the space is small, so we don't hold a lot of inventory. But we met a couple of people in farmers markets where we host their products as well, as long as you're licensed with the health department. Otherwise, we sell spices. Another Communitas alumni, Corey Amos, we sell her spice blend.
Oh, wow.
And she's an anesthesiologist, but she established a spice blend for people who have high blood pressure. It's a Caribbean spice blend. We sell that in the cafe. I wasn't in this cohort. The founders of the chocolate company, Soul Cacao, we were going to do a collaboration with them. So I hope we get back in contact with them because we would love to have their chocolate in the cafe. So we always make ourselves available because you never know. I tell people, don't be one track minded. You know, if you feel you're saturated with too much information, squeeze yourself out so you could absorb more information. We need to absorb, let the energy be able to flow through. So we don't close ourselves off to just food or just organic or just pastry or just coffee. But we do want to collaborate and partner with people that's going to help not just elevate the brand, but give us exposure. Exposure so that people can know who we are, contribute to the mission so that we can actually start hiring people and launch the nonprofit. The nonprofit is active, is on paper, meaning it's fully 501c3, but we haven't been able to fully hire anyone to launch the program because I would never want to hire someone that I can't retain. The goal is for them, once we hire them, they will always have a job.
I love the intentionality. And also, like, I love how it really does take a community. And also shout out to Dr. Corey Amos of the Spice Theory and Soul Cacao, Daniel Maloney and Brothers. Daniel's also going to be on the Communitas podcast. So,
Look at that.
Yes. And I love how intentional, like just going through that story and just the intricacies of the cafe and how intentional you are about everything. And it makes me think about, so amongst your 4 degrees, you also have an MBA from Louisiana State mm-hmm. University of Shreveport. So it's very clear that you had some business knowledge going into starting Featuring the Cafe. However, mm-hmm. there must have been problems that you had to solve that were not covered by your education. So what in retrospect do you wish you had known when first starting out with your venture?
I'm glad you asked me that question, because that's another example of what it is that I had told you, that things that I wish I had known or someone had told me that I didn't have access to, which is why I tell my story all the time, because there's always going to be someone mm-hmm. that looks from the outside in thinking that is easy and is not. So I have a health science degree. I have my culinary degree. I have an undergrad and graduate degree in business administration. I have 33 years of working for the city, from everything from purchasing, accounting, labor law, orientation, EEO, right to know, pools, beaches, basketball courts, you name it, facilities management, I did it. I wrote procurement contracts and oversaw multi-million dollar expense and personnel budgets. I did everything from plumbing to plow trucks. I have a commercial driver's license. I did civil service orientation trainings for people to get their civil service titles, including me having 3 civil service titles. And you would think that I would be able to go into a space and open up a little cafe. And that little place brought me down to my knees. The space itself, the renovation process just went all ridiculously haywire. Me underestimating needing to get professionals to come in and do some of the plumbing and electrical work, which I did, and then trusting that they knew what they were doing, they didn't. God delivered 3 brothers to me who were extraordinary, but I had to work on their time because mm-hmm. they were coming to save the day. So when you're doing projections and expecting to open at a certain time, thinking that you're going to start making money at a certain time, but then your renovations don't happen when you think they are, you're losing money. And my husband and I was losing money because not only did we have to now hire a new group of people to help us with the stuff that the people we did hire mess up, we were behind on generating revenue, and we had already bought product thinking that we were going to open at a certain time. So we were losing inventory. I'm thinking that, okay, I left my job. We have some savings. It's not going to cost me that much to open this little cafe. I initially wanted to open a full service restaurant because that's the vision that I have, is to have a full restaurant to execute a robust seasonal menu where we're changing the menu and ingredients all the time, where it's always something different that you're going to experience. And me finding a location that fit in our budget with a full kitchen was just not in the cards at the time, which is why I wound up with the smaller location without a kitchen, but with the oven. But then that also made me feel like I had to make up for this void. Like psychologically too, we have to let go of what we think yeah. is good for us at the time. And I wasn't letting go of, but this is what I want to do. So if I can't do it this way, I'm just going to supplement. And me supplementing really hurt us worse, because I kept trying to push my idea of, well, if I can't cook, I'm just going to try to do everything I can without cooking. And I spent an enormous amount of money on products and produce that we couldn't keep in the cafe because we're too small. We only have 2 refrigerators. We didn't get the volume of patronage that we thought we were going to get. I wound up working 7 days a week every day for 3 months, hoping that, like, maybe if I'm open all the time, we could kind of get some momentum with patronage. And I wound up exhausting myself. I honestly took for granted too, as well, that when you hire someone, and it's very important that people understand that when you see people in these food establishments and the hospitality industry, they're not always being paid above board. They are getting paid under the table. Mm-hmm. And we have to, one, stop ignoring that's exploiting people. That's just another form of modern day slavery, when you're not paying people above board, because then we know they're not getting benefit. We know that they're not getting the things that they need to be able to take care of themselves. So I wanted to make sure that if I hired anybody, I was making sure that I was doing it efficiently to make sure that they would be able to get the things that they needed. And let me tell you, it cost me more money. I had to have disability and workers' compensation insurance for 1 employee, and plus the payroll service that I was using to make sure that his time was being accurately documented and that he was getting paid appropriately. I was spending 3 times what his paycheck was just to have him as an employee. So I wound up having to let him go, and that really broke my heart. My husband still works for the city. And that's another thing I'm thinking. All right, so my husband still works for the city. I'm sure this first year will be a little bit rocky, but we doing good. We have a network. We have a base. We'd be able to build our customer base. We won't go hungry or be homeless. My husband has been making up the shortfall of the cafe and taking care of us in this apartment since January 2025. Yeah. And he is exceptionally worn thin. So I say all of that to say that it doesn't matter how much you prepare yourself. One, and nothing will be perfect, so don't wait for it to be. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be a right time. You have to create the right time. And you will never know unless you do it. You will never know what to fix or what to pivot from unless you're doing it. So it's no amount of preparation I could have done that would have given me this information.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm in it, it's helping me make decisions. And this also, too, the time and the space that we're in right now, I have to consider. You know, I said earlier, I was forcing a square into a round peg. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a full kitchen, so I was trying to accommodate for that. And I wasn't letting that idea go. I had to eventually let that go. Am I going to have to let go of what I think this space was intended for? You know, I have to leave myself open to that. And I have to let that decision come to me and let me, when I make the decision, that it's going to be effortless. So we'll see. But right now, you can only deal with what you have going on today. You can't focus on what happened yesterday. And you definitely can't make a determination for tomorrow. What I do know for a fact is that my best self is right now and my better self is still waiting for me in the future.
So, thank you for sharing all the things that you learned and just like going through that process and being vulnerable in that. And then also it's like understanding that sometimes it's like we can get to a goal in different ways. And It seems like you are in the process or you know that is what it takes. And so I now want to shift our needs to the community. So we've talked about this a little bit, but our conversations on Communitas of New York have really been focused on community-driven entrepreneurship and also collaboration with the community. So food and gathering of people really go hand in hand. And for you, this situates you as a business owner in a space of listening. So what have you learned from witnessing the gathering of people at Featuring the Cafe? And what kinds of feedback have you gotten from the community?
Well, like I had said earlier, had we not left ourselves available to entertain other types of programs and events in our cafe, I wouldn't have never met the people that I've met that led me to information, that got me connected to a person that opened the door for me, that established something that I would never had. Mm-hmm. And me having conversations with people and telling them that we are available for collaboration is what has really brought people to the cafe. The reason why we have a 5-star rating on Google isn't necessarily because of the food. It's really because of people were told to come to the cafe by some sort of person that came because we did a book reading. For instance, I'm really waiting for Taisha to come and do her in podcast mode. Mm-hmm. I am so waiting for her so that we can come and launch that at the cafe. We have had the people from the schools come, the summer youth people come. If you research and do an analysis of the businesses in Harlem, you will very rarely find a food establishment that avails themselves to the community the way that we do.
Yeah.
And the reason why we do that is because that's what Harlem used to be. The Black community used to be community. It wasn't just about local business. The meat market wasn't just the meat market. The candy shop wasn't just the candy shop. The soul food restaurant wasn't just the soul food restaurant. They were place of spaces of gathering and collaboration and fellowship. And I wanted to bring that back to our community. I could give you a quick story. I was very intentional at first not to put plugs, like electrical outlets, in the seating area space because I didn't want people to sit there to be on their computers. I intentionally wanted the people to come in and talk to each other.
Yeah.
And I said, if you come in and you sit here on your computer now, you're not going to engage. You're not even going to look up and see who's sitting next to you.
True.
So that was one of the things that I was completely against doing. And then eventually I was sitting out because like the space not that big and I needed to work. And I was like, I need an outlet because I need to plug in my sound.
So you need it.
My husband was like, I told you, you was going to have to put some outlets over. But nothing though. The space is still small enough with people still, even if they do come in for that.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. It's like the angels, ancestors, and spirit guides are in there like, yep, we still going to make this connection no matter what it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I have met models. I have met artists, I have met engineers, I have met people from large corporations, from Microsoft to USAID, and it's all from just them walking into the space and saying, this is really warm and comfortable. This really says a story. And that's how we're able to get out. And also, I participate in other stuff. So I'm a board member of Community Board 10. I serve on the Public Safety and Government and Budget Committee. So that's another conduit that I use to talk about my business. Yeah. I'm on the Marcus Garvey Park Alliance, and I worked with them when I was working for the Parks Department. That's another way I talk about my business. I'm very much involved in tenant advocacy and tenant rights in my community. I'm also a member of the Working Families Party. I know a lot of politicians that from not just when I worked for the city, but also just doing the public service work within my community. So when I talk about my business, Monique, I literally don't talk about it as if it's a food. I have to like then say, oh yeah, and we do sell great coffee and products at the cafe.
Yeah. I mean, the mission is and the impact is so big and it just encompasses so much. And I love that at the heart of everything, community is so key. And also, shout out to Taisha, a.k.a. T. Francis of
Impact Mode. That's right. Yeah, T. Francis.
Yeah, she's also a Communitas alumna. So shout out to her.
And Joy, too, because when I went through the cohort, Joy was our mentor, actually. I think she probably can get some props because I did win first place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Joy, Shalisha Joy of Stapleton Arts.
Yes.
And so speaking of community, because you also talk about this a lot, but I would love to know more about how you encounter those folks who you would like to offer training through your cafe.
So we send out a monthly newsletter and I make sure everybody that comes in signs up so they could keep informed of the things that we're offering. But I also started Harlem Prosperity and Unity Club. And we do that on the second Sunday of the month. We do it via Zoom. And that's another way for us to have a standard of the things that we want to see happen in our community in terms of access and resources, especially holding our politicians accountable. Because the way that I can stabilize my program in terms of getting long-term security for the employees that I want to hire is through government grants. I would like to be able to get government grants, which is supplementing the programs that they would normally not be able to provide. Mm-hmm. And the way that we're able to do that is to hold our elected officials accountable for the things that they're supposed to be doing in our community in collaboration with organizations like mine, where we're visible, accountable, and accessible. And we have a set program in place. We have the mechanism in place to be able to execute this program. Mm-hmm. But too often, and I'm sure that you've heard it or seen it, especially under the Eric Adams administration, of how much money just has been poorly mismanaged and not utilized. And a lot of businesses like mine did not have access to these funds that were supposed to be available, not just for entrepreneurs, but for nonprofits too. You know, Harlem has one of the largest homelessness and unemployment rates in the entire city. And there's no reason for that to be the case when we house some of the most elected officials as well. Like Central Harlem has four elected officials, yet we are always in a circumstance economically where people are struggling to pay their rent. They work in two jobs. They're barely getting paid minimum wage. The school retention rate is horrific. The crime rate is horrific. So these elected officials have a responsibility that if you want our vote isn't just does the stop at you getting elected. As a matter of fact, that's your vehicle. It drives your purpose in being in office. And if you're not delivering, then we have to take back our elected official seats. We have to primary them and replace them with people that are going to start doing the work for us. So this group that I formed, and anybody is welcome and it's free, is called the Harlem Unity and Prosperity Club. So I could give you an example. We started it this January, the second Sunday in January. I didn't even know that there was a Black-owned comedy club in Harlem. And there's the only Black-owned comedy club in the country. Like, there's no other Black-owned comedy club in the country, and it's called Comedy in Harlem. The woman who owns it, her name is Nikki Sunshine, her and her husband, and they have exceptional comedians that perform there on a daily basis. I mean, all of your Black comedians that you have ever seen on back in the days, Def Comedy Jam and all that stuff, they perform there. We have a Black spa that's in Harlem. We have a speakeasy. A gentleman just opened up a speakeasy. He's from the South. And we had about four or five people on the first call, and it was really informative. And the goal is for me to continue to avail myself to do stuff like that, because if we're not out there making ourselves available, Monique. Who else is going to tell our story? Who won't know about it?
Exactly that. Well, we are here on Communitas of New York to tell your story. And speaking of the fact that we're on the Communitas of New York podcast, we've also mentioned Communitas a handful of times now. And I've also seen that you have contributed as a speaker to venture cohorts and also have had fellow venture alumni in your cafe space, as we've mentioned. Can you describe how, since going through the Ventures Accelerated program, you have been able to intersect in community or perhaps Communitas Hay Ground Harlem incubator space with Ventures alumni?
Well, one, let me tell you, the universe led me to Communitas, and I'm going to tell you how that happened. So I told you that I always make sure that I'm keeping myself abreast of organizations in the community that are doing not just food-based work, but humanitarian work. Edward winded up Googling during their food insecurities panel. He was Googling the same thing, and he found me, and he reached out to me and asked me to speak on their panel. This was before I was part of the cohort.
Yeah.
And I had never heard of Communitas before. So now I'm researching and I'm doing all the stuff. And I'm on the website and I see T. Francis, right? But I didn't even put it together because in my mind, I'm thinking it's not even her because why would I be seeing her on this website, right?
Yeah.
So I'm on the website reading and my cafe door opens and it's her.
Wow.
Wait.
That is wild.
I said, wait a minute. I turned the computer off. I said, is this you? And she said, yes. She said, I was coming to talk to you about them. They asked me if I knew anybody that could speak on their panel. I said, the guy just emailed me. This wow. person. That's how I came to know Communitas. And let me tell you, so she had felt like I was well beyond participating in the cohort in terms of like, you know, the cohorts are really to help people identify or at least solidify what it is that they want to do and get them kind of connected where it is and either forming their business, mm-hmm. establishing what their product is, where is it that they want to launch, all that stuff. And since I had kind of done all of that, she said, but you should probably just listen to what the cohort is. Maybe you want to participate. And it was from that day that I spoke on a panel and after meeting that beautiful angel who is now in heaven, Cassandra, after meeting her and talking to her and meeting Sun Moon and meeting David and seeing the impact that the audience was having based on the things that the panel was saying and how important it is that people really understand
yeah.
the necessity of us doing the work of establishing a food supply that isn't capitalism. I had already knew I wanted to participate in the cohort. I didn't even care what it was going to be about. I was like, I don't care. Just send me the information. I'm going to do it. And let me tell you, I have felt energetically, mm-hmm. spiritually, I know that they are rooting for me. It's almost kind of like pressure to an extent because I revere them more than they probably know that I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they appreciate what it is that I'm attempting to try to do for my community. But this is an example of how it is that if I had of just taken it to say, I'm just going to speak on this panel and not participate,
yeah.
I wouldn't have never even been able to meet you. You are an example of how would I have ever known you, Monique? How would I have mm-hmm. ever met you had I not continued my journey with Communitas past that panel? Or past the cohort, or past yeah. me winning, or past me speaking at their next cohort, or past me participating in their programs. So they play a very big role in why it is, and I think about them all the time and how, where they started, they had to start somewhere and they had to grow. Yes. And actually, I'm very thankful that they have a new structure in the utilization of Hay Ground because I wanted to have our first annual gala for the nonprofit. And I wanted to do it there. I knew it was going to be there. I just didn't know how I was going to raise the funds to host it there. And now they have a format where we can do that, which will leave me room to be able to focus on getting sponsors. So you'll be invited, Monique.
Oh, I can't wait. I am looking forward to it. I know it's going to be an experience and an mm-hmm. impactful experience. And, you know, even for me, Communitas is that boost. And it's also like that confidence booster in business owners and laying that foundation as well. So I love that you share the impact. And also, you are the epitome of someone who is in community and shouted out a couple of people. So I want to take the time to give them their flowers as well.
So you mentioned Cassandra Campbell, program manager who was running the Communitas Ventures program, and she was also a Ventures alumna representing the Jamaica Benevolent Arm and Culture Center.
and Edward Greenwood, co-executive director, who is also head of venture resources, and David DeGregoria is director of impact data at Communitas, and Samu Zhang is co-executive director of Communitas. So shout out to the alumni, the team.
Yes. Snap, snap, snap.
Snap, snap. Yeah. So we have spoken about so many amazing things, and I cannot end this conversation without talking about the future. So in terms of featuring what you've learned, I hope to see for just like the folks that are training through your cafe, and also what's coming up next for you.
So what I intend to do is to actually double down on making sure that people know that we're there. We're going to start doing marketing announcements in other community spaces. So we're going to do an announcement at Abyssinian Church for the business. We're going to host electoral candidate meet and greet.
Wow.
At the cafe. Yes, we are. I'm really pushing the boulder on the accessibility and people understanding what a community space is. And it's not just food, because I feel like if we make ourselves available so people can know that we're there, this will open up financial opportunities for us as well. People will not just get to see the space and hear the story, they'll see the importance and they'll actually be able to see the impact that they can make while they're in the neighborhood that we're trying to serve.
Yeah.
We have people that come to the cafe from other neighborhoods and they see not just the historical value of Harlem, because the 130 Fifth Street corridor is extraordinarily peaceful, it's structured, it's organized, it's very quiet, but it also has a lot of potential for awareness and growth, economic growth. So I'm looking to make sure that we're opening the doors even more to collaborate with people who are willing to help elevate us and introduce us to venture capitalists, to angel investors, to other people who want to see humanitarian relief efforts grow through food and through hospitality. The people that's going to come through this program probably would have never traveled outside of New York City, let alone going to sit and help a family in the Congo, in Gaza, and Sudan. We'll have the opportunity to do that when we are able to have a funnel of financial stability to be able to pay them and do that. And I just see us continuing to make an impact, no matter how that happens, no matter what that looks like. I believe, Monique, that we don't have to figure out how. All we have to do is take the step. How is going to reveal itself? All we have to do is take one step and the next step will be revealed. So I'm just doing a day by day thing, girl, and we'll see how it transpires.
Yes, that is a true leader. You know, as you were saying that, I think about how, you know, there are people it's like, okay, that's a true leader. I can get behind that person, because it's like in everything you do, you have been very intentional. And it's also a true leader is someone who is able to see around the corner. So it's like you're going ahead and you're peeking around the corner and you're saying, okay, these are the things and the opportunities that are out there. And I'm going to not just talk about it, but do something about it.
So that's right.
That's amazing. So, yeah. I would love, love, love to just like continue to share the work that you're doing. And I think it's amazing. And so for you, I would like to say thank you so much for your time and also being such a pillar in the community. And I've learned so much through your journey, hearing your journey, and I'm sure people who are listening have as well. So Arnice, where can people find you and where can they continue to support you?
They can support us on our website at featuringculinaryarts.com, featuringculinaryarts.com, or they can follow me on Instagram at featuringachef. And when you follow me on Instagram, the links for everything we do is in my bio, including the website where you can go to donate if you would like to donate. Again, we are a 501c3 fully tax deductible nonprofit. And anything people can contribute will help us be able to bring our people to a space of financial security. That is my goal in life, so that people can not only sustain and take care of themselves individually or their families, but so that they could travel the world and help people do it in other countries. So again, in Instagram, you can get all of my links at featuring a chef and the cafe. is at 236 West 135th Street between 7th and 8th Avenue. And for those who aren't Harlemites, that's between Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevard and Frederick Douglass. Because, you know, those of us that are Harlemites know the real avenues are 7th and 8th Avenue. So that's where we are. And this was a pleasure. This was super, super dope and awesome. And I just want to thank you and David and Edward and Sun Moon and Sophia.
Yes.
For all of the work that you guys do through Communitas, because, you know, we have a blanket of organizations that could eventually be interwoven with each other.
Mm-hmm.
This world will be exactly what it needs to be, but better. Yeah. And it'll be that way because of organizations like Communitas.
For sure. We appreciate Communitas and the Communitas Squad and Sophia Mojica. And Arnice, just to give you your flowers, going back, Sophia Mojica, Director of Hayground Harlem, to give you your flowers, you are a Black-owned, woman-owned, family-owned business, and you have done so much. You support the community in so many ways with your cafe, your nonprofit. And you've met so many amazing people in the community and just so involved in community-focused organizations and initiatives. So keep on being the leader that you are. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with the Communitas of New York family. And thank you so much for being you and your time as well.
Thank you again. And before I forget, because my son would never let me forget it, my little baby cakes miracle, Danny Jonathan Hernandez, is the light on my path. And he is the reason why I'll make sure that I will never give up. No one else should either. Do not give up.
And thank you again. And for everyone listening, until next time.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 3 is produced by Sun Moon Zhang and David Michael D. Gregoria.